have the privilege of sitting down with Hollywood legend Dennis Quaid. Quaid made his mark in the late 70s with breakthrough roles in films like Breaking Away and The Right Stuff. Beyond his film career, Quaid explores television and music. His deeply moving songs are featured in the number one inspirational album, Fallen, a gospel record for sinners. Looking ahead, Quaid is set to mesmerize audiences with his upcoming role in Reagan, portraying the complexity of the 40th President of the United States. Additionally, he takes on another impactful role in The Long Game, depicting the true story of the Del Rio Mustangs. Quaid's commitment to powerful storytelling cements his status as a cinematic icon. Join me in welcoming the one and only Dennis Quaid. What up, Dennis Quaid?
Everything.
Everything.
It's all good.
I have so enjoyed getting to know you and Laura. We met, what, about a year and a half ago?
Yep.
Or so?
Yeah.
And we first met at that show in L.A.
Yeah, on the battleship.
On the battleship. And that was a fundraiser for what?
That was...
Was it Tunnels to Towers?
That was for veterans, yeah.
Yeah.
I think Tunnels to Towers did have something to do with that.
I think so.
Yeah. And I've wound up... I've got a real relationship with them now.
I just saw you on TV today.
I think it's one of the best organizations around.
Actually. I agree. So that's the one where, is it mostly for policemen?
It's first responders and men and women service, men and women who have, you know, given their lives, and we take care of their families, and we and take care of them too.
Yes.
That were catastrophically injured. And it started because Frank Silla, his brother, was a firefighter, and he was on his way home, and when 9/11 happened, and he turned around and got his equipment and ran into the tunnel to get to the towers, and nobody ever saw him again.
Oh my God!
And that's why it's called Tunnels to Towers.
I donate to them.
Yeah, it's a great organization. What's wonderful is it's really over 95, 96 cents of every dollar goes right to where it's supposed to go,
which that's is amazing.
That's that kind of instead of paying for administration or this or that.
Right.
And so I feel really good about that.
I love that. And because I feel like the church has failed in so many ways, and especially America, in the sense that instead of having all these government programs that burden us taxpayers, you know, things like that should be so much more prevalent. And like I always used to say that these big mega churches should have a pro bono hospital day, like on a Wednesday. And if you're sick or whatever, and you have all these doctors who go to the church or who don't even go to the church, and they come in and they do like a pro bono day and treat people for free.
Yeah, I hear of like Christian health insurance places that are popping up.
Right.
Things like that.
My parents do that.
Yeah. I think that's a great idea.
I do too.
But it's really what you're talking about is community taking care of the community, and the more local that we can do that.
Right.
I think the more impact it has, and it makes us better people.
I totally agree. Because it's like, starts with the family unit, you know, taking care of your family, and then little by little, out and out and out and out.
Right.
Instead of just like depending on some big, you know, bureaucracy or something. That's why I love Tunnel of Towers, you're saying.
Yeah, government tends to mess that stuff up.
They do. Because
it does take an organization of people, you know, with a real personal stake in it.
Yes, absolutely. Like you see somebody that goes to your church and they've, you know, but anyway, I always think that I have a problem with organized religion. I don't really love it.
Yeah. I think just I've had problems with organized religion myself, you know, like churchianity.
I agree.
Mainly, you know, because for me, as you know, as pertains to Christianity, it's about a personal relationship with Jesus mm-hmm. and with God. And it's, you know, anytime you have somebody in between that, and, you know, a lot of times that's what the church was about, mm-hmm. you know, going back to selecting which books were going to be in the Bible, you know, that they had that Council of Nicene where they decided what it was going to be. And,
right.
And it kind of gets away from what it originally was, I think.
I agree with you 100%. I've always said that anything that goes between you and your relationship with God is false. Like there shouldn't be anything that is a step between that.
Yeah. But at the same time, I think there is the church that Jesus set up. He did set up the church, and as you know, as it's supposed to function, and it's the way that it was originally supposed to function.
The body of believers.
Yeah. But then you have human
yes.
coming in into that, and that we just, all of us, we just have a way of messing all up.
Which I love the title of your new album, Christian album for
yeah,
singers.
Yeah, it's called Fallen, a gospel record for sinners.
I love that.
Yeah, because
we
I
all
like
are.
To say I wanted to have the biggest possible audience. So that's
yeah.
what that is. And it's kind of, it's my spiritual journey, I guess, you know, throughout my life. It's mm-hmm. like songs that I grew up in church with, in the Baptist church, that I love, and songs that I've written you know,
right.
that have to do with certain times in my life.
It's a great record. I really do love it.
Oh, and thank you. I appreciate that. It
makes me feel good, you know, because I'm
great.
I'm the biggest sinner of all, but I love Jesus with all my heart.
Well, I'm the same. You know, I myself had a big problem with churchianity and, you know, as a kid growing up, because it was kind of like to me about money and I got disillusioned, I think. I got into Eastern religions, you know, got into drugs and I got into, you know, a lot of things, but I always kept my, I had a relationship with God, even if it was like I was going elsewhere.
Yeah.
I read the Dhammapada. I read the Bhagavad Gita as well. I read the Quran as well as reading the Bible. And then when it came around about 1990, it was like I'd had enough of, you know, getting high and stuff like that too
yeah.
much that
mm-hmm.
I, came around to reading the Bible again. It was the red words of Jesus that mm-hmm. that spoke to me. And that's really where my real personal relationship started
God. I love that because it is the red words of Jesus that, and people are so confused so often about what it means to be a believer. It's like, you know, I can't go to church or I can't go to God until I've straightened up my life.
Yeah.
And it's just the opposite. Like the more messy your life is, the more you should go to God because he loves us unconditionally and meets us where we are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People sometimes miss the point about that. And, you know, I think a lot of the judgment and stuff that seems to be associated with church and with, you know, it's that we're already redeemed. We're sinners at that, but we're already forgiven for that.
Yes.
And it's because, and it's free.
And it's free.
Yeah.
Redeemed
and
we don't deserve
means,
it.
You know, free.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's your free
gift.
Ticket. So you need to take all that and dump it on, mm-hmm. on Jesus, on God, because he wants you to live in that freedom.
Absolutely. And he loves us. And, you know, anybody who has children understands that you have four kids.
I have three.
Three.
Yeah.
And I have three also.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as a parent, that there is nothing your children could do. Nothing that would make you turn away from them.
Yeah.
Or turn or give up on them or not love them or not forgive them or not be there for them.
Yes.
And we are...
I mean, there's consequences.
There are consequences, yes.
But
as there are with God, too.
Yeah, for us, too, as well.
But, yeah. Because that's the thing. It's like, and we're just sinful humans. Imagine how much more perfect God's love is for us.
Right.
You know, there's nothing we can do, I believe, that could lose our salvation or whatever. But there are earthly consequences because we have free will. So we make decisions, bad decisions. And I don't think it's, you know, God works in a way of like, I'm going to punish you for what you did, but I will allow your life to get sort of screwed up.
Yeah. This is a punishment. I think that Jesus actually came here as much to, you know, telling us about heaven after death. But I think he also was teaching us how to have heaven on earth.
Right
here, and in that sense, it's the what you call sin or whatever it is. It's about if you live in this way, and if you do in this way, then you're going to feel in this way, and your life is going to be changed by that.
Right,
and it's like living in having heaven on earth. In
correct.
Other words, instead of living in your shame and your all the
guilt,
anything that the world brings upon you.
And those are all lies from Satan. I mean, the one command, the biggest command that God has for us is to not worry.
Yeah.
And not fear.
Yeah.
You know, and I definitely struggle with that. And that's sinful. I mean, you are not supposed to. But man, it's hard not to. And it's funny, today I just got on Amazon and I ordered 4 easy to read Bibles because I'm always texting my kids on our group texts, and I'm just like, you know, is everybody saved? Because, you know, every now and then I'll start worrying, which I shouldn't. And I have a strong belief in the rapture and pre-tribulation rapture. Mm-hmm. And so I want my children to be raptured.
To be ready.
And I don't want them to have to go through tribulation. And so, and they all are saved. I mean, they don't act like it, but no, they all claim.
Well, who does?
Christ. Who does? Yeah. I don't. Yeah. I mean, I do. And I think it's, you know, the biggest myth that people have when it comes to Christianity and religion is, how do you treat people? I think that's how you really know whether or not somebody is truly saved. You can't judge it because it's between them and God. So you never know. I mean, but
yeah.
How people treat others is a big indicator, I believe.
Yeah. That's all about taking the log out of your own eye first.
It's yes.
It's really not my role to judge anybody else.
Yeah, I do. I like to judge people,
kind of
though, but.
Yeah, well, I guess we all do in spite of it, you know.
I'm bad at gossiping. So Olivia got engaged, my middle daughter.
Really?
Yeah, you know Livy really
yeah.
well.
When was that?
Over Thanksgiving. And her fiance is 26 and she just turned 21. So she just took her first drink.
Wow.
Last week.
Yeah.
Yeah, ever. And you know, she's young to be engaged, but at the same time, I feel like their generation is sort of going, kind of circling back
around. They're kind
of
circling back around, aren't they? I mean, I was 23,
mm-hmm.
I think.
I was 22.
Yeah.
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 But that marriage didn't work.
My parents' generation, they were 18.
Yeah.
My cousins got married at 17.
Yeah. My mom got married at 18, had my brother at 19. And then ended up having 6 more after my brother. So I'm the 3rd of 7. Now, how many siblings?
They say we need more people, you know.
Well, we are desperately underpopulated.
We are.
We are desperately underpopulated. And that scares me because, like, who's going to take care of me?
Well, my generation is the biggest segment of the population, the baby boom.
Mm-hmm.
And, So, who's going to take care of
me? We need babies. We need people to have babies.
We need babies. Some babies.
Yeah. A lot of babies. And, but anyway, we just, you know, met with a wedding planner yesterday and I forgot where I was going with that, but, Oh, no, we were gossiping about somebody. And I would say if I had to name my biggest sin, it's that, because I just love to talk. But to me, it's more funny. Like, I like talking about people.
It's a natural human thing.
It is.
It's entertainment,
it is.
Isn't
mm-hmm.
it?
It is.
Come on.
I love psychology.
Yeah.
And I love analyzing why people are the way they are, especially mm-hmm. crazy people. Like, you and I are not crazy, but like crazy people. Well, you might be crazy.
You sure about that?
I've only known you for like a year. But I know your wife, and she's very sane. So
she's,
I would imagine you're sane
she
as well.
She keeps me sane. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I love Laura. She's amazing. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Houston.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. First 20 years of my life. Sometimes called West Louisiana.
Mm-hmm. West Louisiana.
Well, it's, you know, Houston is kind of like they're the bayou country. And so, it was a great place to grow up. I grew up in like the 50s and 60s in Texas. And it was a great time to grow up.
I
in
bet.
America. It really was. It was kind of like the idyllic suburban life, you know.
That sounds amazing. But not, you didn't grow up in the country, you grew up in town.
I grew up in town, but my grandfather, he lived in like Frankston, Jacksonville, Texas, and, you know, these little towns, and I'd spend summers up there.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very very rooted in that country of it's in that. Life that comes with it in the way of thinking. My grandfather was, he came to Texas in 1903 in a covered wagon.
Wow.
From Tennessee, from about 40 miles from here. And was a farmer, worked on oil rigs and things like that. But he was a very country guy, and he became rich. It is towards the end of his life, they had oil on land mm-hmm. that he had, and he worked on oil rigs and stuff. And he went from, flat broke to being worth $2 million in a period of a couple of months.
Oh, my gosh.
Oil rigs. And but still lived in like a, small house.
Modest.
And yeah, he bought himself two 1961 Star Chiefs. Pontiacs and
oh my
but
god!
But I'd still go, drive around with him. He'd still drive a couple of miles to save a dollar on a rope.
Yeah, that's amazing. So, did you end up being like a rich kid because your grandpa got rich?
No. That's like he kept that tight.
But, yeah,
it was just the way he lived. And so.
Mom's dad
was,
or dad's
yeah,
dad?
Yeah, well, I guess my dad was an electrician, and he got to where he had his own business. And then my mom, she was a housewife, and then she became she got into real estate mm-hmm. in Houston in the 60s. So she was like, I know she was the first working mom on my block.
That's awesome.
And, really went after it. She's a great example.
How old were you when your mom started working?
I was about 8.
So did that bother you, or do you remember?
No, I was kind of really excited for her about it. Mm-hmm. She'd gone to school and, doing courses. She got her license. And then I remember when she sold her first house and it was quite something. So growing up, I've always gravitated towards strong women too, because she was just that.
Yeah. Well, I grew up on a farm, and my mom's dream was to be a farmer and just have a bunch of babies. I mean, yeah. She would have been Amish if she could. And she's very old fashioned, but we're from the Midwest. And so Midwesterners are very stoic. They're very unemotional. And so it took my mother a long time to get to the point where she would even say, I love you too, mm-hmm. when we were little and growing up. But she was always at home, always cooking, always meeting our physical needs with cooking and doing our laundry and But I worked my ass off.
That's her way of showing love.
Yes.
That's a love language that goes along with that, right?
Yes.
It's one of the love languages.
And it's mine too.
Yeah.
You know, I got that from her. Like, if somebody does something for me to help me out, that means everything to me.
Yeah.
But I remember she started considering getting a job at one point because my parents divorced when I was 12 and we were on food stamps during that time. It was just terrible. And, you know, we were embarrassed and like going to the grocery store and paying with food stamps. Mm. And I remember her thinking about becoming a real estate agent. And this was in the 70s. And we were all unbelievably against it because I just didn't want her to be away.
You didn't want her out of the home.
I didn't want her out of the home or off the farm.
Yeah.
You know, we had about 500 acres and she was not only inside, but she was also on a tractor all the time and out doing the outside stuff.
Yeah, well, that's a lot. That's already a career. And
it is.
As well as taking care of the family and stuff like that.
Yeah, it is. But I was grateful that she was an entrepreneur because when she realized that my siblings and I had musical talent, she could have just been lazy and told people like, yeah, my kids are, they can sing great and they can, but she went out and found musicians and music equipment and all that and put that
together. Did she have
a musical
background as well?
No. But she has like natural rhythm and she can, you know, hum along perfectly. But my dad is the one that really had the beautiful voice.
Mm-hmm.
And just an exceptionally beautiful voice. So for some reason, us kids all got.
So your mom was like responsible. She's the structure and everything and mm-hmm. the nuts and bolts. And your dad was the
working
influence
all the
as
time.
Far. And your dad was the influence, though, as far
he
as
was.
The rest of that goes. That's kind of the same with me as well. Mm-hmm. My mom was always like, setting things up, me and my brother driving us, you know, to guitar lessons or acting, acting at school or whatever, and really kind of making that possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know? My dad was talented. He just didn't know where. Really to put it
right
or how to do it
right yeah
but, you know he was he played the piano he played really great he was a great piano player great dancer
and singer
a really good singer
yeah and your
sort
mom
of like Dean Martin his voice
really yeah. Oh my gosh
yeah in fact I have him he recorded one of my songs back when I was doing the Night the Lights went on in Georgia that was like back in the 80s
like so, who did that song?
It was the movie called The Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia from the title of the song.
Do you know who sang that song? You're going to die laughing. It was the girl who was on the Carol Burnett show.
Really?
Yes. And she was on Mama's Family. What was her name? She is the original singer.
Really?
That's the night that the lights went out in Georgia. But of course, I know Reba's version because Reba McEntire is one of my idols.
Yeah.
Do you know her?
I've met Reba. Yeah. She's great. I mean, great talent.
Oh, God, I love her.
Incredible talent.
Yeah. I was obsessed.
Still around, too.
As a kid, and she's still around.
And multi. She's been able to like cross over acting and just
like
whatever
you.
It is.
Like you. I mean, Dennis, I have tried acting a few times and I'm so great like off the cuff, you know, like I'm kind of a comedian at my shows and stuff, but like, and my manager hates it when I say this and he'll probably make me cut it out, but I'm a horrible actress. I mean,
I don't
horrible.
Believe that.
I am.
I just think you're in search of a part. That's all.
Maybe that's true.
Yeah. Because we're all just playing ourselves when it gets down to it.
That's what a director told me. Like, just be yourself.
Exactly.
But you're more than that when you act. Like, now that I've gotten to know you and know that, but you really do become other character. Like, you become the character.
I become what I, if I were that person.
Okay.
It's, I mean, becoming the character is, I try to see their point of view. Just like what you said before, it's like you love figuring out what makes people tick. I mean, that's really an actor And that's what an actor does, is figure out what makes people tick. But you're still commenting on it, and you're still yourself.
But how do you doing
that?
You
know, otherwise,
though,
that's why you go see it. People are like Marlon Brando. You know, you're watching Marlon Brando. It doesn't matter,
because that's how he is.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's the part.
So he actually talks
him
that way.
That's what that attracts us. You know, not the part.
Yeah,
you're watching him do the part. But
I just.
But then again, he's so right for the part, and that's what you're in search of. Because
okay.
I have a feeling I think you'd be a really good actress.
Well, maybe I just need the part. Like, if I could do something really funny, like a funny character, but.
Well, for one thing, you're not afraid to be yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You, like, and I'm not bullshitting you. Like, you have always been one of my very favorite actors. Like, honestly.
Thanks.
But for your skill, like, you know, I mean, you know, you're, sorry, Laura. You're gorgeous and you're sexy and you have all these things and you've got this bad boy kind of persona, but I feel like you're one of the best actors in the business.
I'm good at what I do. And, you know, I love doing what I do.
It's this obvious.
Thing, you know, and just like learn things that as you go along, mm-hmm. you grow into things as you go along.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I nowadays with my career and with acting, it's like I'm enjoying it more than ever before because I'm just kind of really just doing. I'm not trying to get anywhere with it. I'm just doing really the things that appeal to me. And,
like love projects.
Yeah, or things that you know, give me a like something that scares me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's what you know. You want to be challenged with something. That's a. It's the best time of my career, actually.
I feel the same way right now about my career. I feel like I'm singing better than I've ever sang. And what drives me crazy is when people say, are you still doing music? And it makes me furious because, you know, country radio doesn't play women anymore.
Yeah.
And so if you're not on mainstream country radio, no matter how much you're told, like, well, there's all kinds of outlets for music. There's Spotify, there's, you know, I still believe that mainstream television, mainstream radio is the way that you're famous. That's how you get nominated for things.
Yeah, that's sort of the certification, at least with the people I know. They usually go, hey, I heard you on the radio.
Yeah.
You know, instead of exactly. I went looking for you on Spotify.
Exactly. It's not as much.
Yeah.
I'm still touring all the time. Last year I did a little over 80 shows. And I really, really, really enjoy it. But I feel like the last two or three albums that I made have been the best, some of the best of my career, but they're not being heard.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very frustrating.
Yeah. You know? I would imagine so.
Yeah. Do you, like, this is a weird question because I know you're such a great actor and you must love acting, but is your real and true love music?
It's my original love. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's because it's the, thing about music is, you know, I started playing guitar when I was 12. And of course, you know, growing up, it was like Elvis and my idols were, it was music. And it's also, you know, in order to act, you really got to have somebody else and a whole group of people to go with that when you're making a movie. And, you know, as a teenager, you're alone in your room and you've got your guitar and it's really in your head. It fulfills a lot of stuff. It sure took the place of a lot, I guess, therapy later on in life too. But it's really the first love. Yeah.
Yeah. Would you say that you had a very typical, like, easy childhood?
I guess so. You know, because mm-hmm. I too, you know, my parents got divorced when I was, you know, about 11. And, you know, I'd say looking back, yeah, I had an easy childhood. But we all go through our angst and we all go through our things. you know, that deepen us as people or learn lessons or traumas or whatever. But mm-hmm. it was basically, my autobiography is going to be called My Lucky Life, actually, because I really just enjoyed every part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, why wouldn't you? I mean, honestly, you've starred in some of the biggest movies, you know, that I think most people can remember. And you're just...
Well, I've got to do what I've dreamed of doing. That's for one thing. How many people really actually get a chance to do that? Because it's, you know, I know so many talented people, and, you know, growing up with, and they either didn't know how to do it or that they just, for one reason or another, didn't get there mm-hmm. or whatever. And, you know, certainly most of it is being talented at it and being at the right, but a lot of it's the right moment. And then, you know, it's really important to enjoy the ride. Mm-hmm. It really is as you're going along and be great and, you know, have gratitude about it and, you know, keep dreaming. But I've got to do so many things that I just had to pinch myself.
Yes. Yeah. And I think you start to enjoy it the older you get, you know, and you're not. So like in my 20s, I was so stressed all the time about my career yeah. and.
Yeah.
You know, I hated getting a call from the record label. It was just like,
yeah, all that thing that we had dreamed of doing and all that stuff. You become, you know, it sounds kind of shallow in a way, but you get kind of weighed down by it. And it becomes, there's a lot that goes with it that you didn't figure on.
Exactly.
And
you have to take a lot of criticism.
Yeah. But then, you know, also, it's not a real job.
Right.
Is it?
Yeah.
You know, and that's, I wouldn't have done well at a regular job.
Me neither.
I know because I had several of them and I always wound up quitting or getting fired.
Yeah. I've never been fired from a job, but I've quit a lot of jobs. I love waiting tables though. I really did.
Yeah. I was a waiter.
I love waiting tables.
Yeah. In fact, that was the joke in L.A. was like, what do you do? I'm an actor. Really? What restaurant? You know, but
yeah.
I waited tables before I got to L.A. I waited tables at Steak and Ale, and I would wear, like, they have big puffy shirts back in the 70s, you know, and a meat cleaver menu, and had, you know, it was like ye olde steakhouse. You have an elastic
amazing.
Buckle that you put on your short pants.
Oh my gosh. Did you move to LA to pursue music?
No, I moved to LA to do acting.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was is that I got my guitar, I was 12, and I knew I was never going to shred a guitar. So as a defense, it was songwriting is really what came up with me. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. And I was going to be a veterinarian. That's what
really?
I wanted to be. It was a vet. Yeah. But then, you know, it's gravitated towards music and acting at the same time. And my first week in University of Houston with this great acting teacher, Cecil Pickett, that my brother took from, and so many people that wound up, you know, in the business. I went down and auditioned at they called them coffee houses back then, mm-hmm. you know, in the 70s, you know, the folk scene, I guess.
Yep.
And I auditioned for this lady and she was smoking a cigarette behind the counter, listening to me audition, and then got through. And she says, what you have is good for living rooms, but you'll never make it. And I guess I made the mistake of believing her. And I went out mm-hmm. to my car and, you know, put my guitar in the trunk and said, well, I guess it's acting. Because I've been in Mr. Pickett's class and it was something like real that he was teaching. It was something tangible there that mm-hmm. I really saw a path, you know, and I was encouraged.
Yes.
You know, we all need encouragement.
Yes.
We do.
Yeah.
Yeah. But now when I'm out when I perform, when, you know, an audience, I sometimes say, well, welcome to my living room.
Yeah. That's what it is. But I got to see you the other night at that show. I can't remember what it was. It was like an ACM honors show.
Oh, yeah.
And
that was for Mr. McGraw. Right at the end?
Yeah, yes. You were honoring Tim.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was honoring somebody who isn't an artist, but who's been in the business. But when I watched you perform, I mean, you really looked and sounded like you've been a musician all of your life.
Well, yeah, I have been. Yeah. You know, it definitely was interweaved, you know, in my acting career, mm-hmm. you know, basically from the beginning. I wrote songs that, you know, wound up in movies. Like The Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia, I had like three songs in that and was playing a singer. I was with Christy McNichol. Remember Christy?
Yes.
That was me and Christy McNichol, and
she was on that show.
She played my little sister.
And
we were kind
gosh.
Of parentless on the road, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
What was the TV show she was in? All Family.
Eight is Enough.
Eight is Enough.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Were you a fan of Ronald Reagan?
Yes, I was.
Same.
Yeah. Yeah, I was. I voted for Ronald Reagan first election. In fact, I voted for Ronald Reagan, and I came home and I had a roommate at the time who was friend from Texas, and he said, who'd you vote for? And I said, Reagan. And he said, you are kicked out of the hippies. So that was it. I was kicked out of the hippies.
Oh, yeah. That's so sad.
Yeah, he's my favorite president. And then when they asked me to play him, that was one of those times where that shiver of fear goes up your spine, and because I feel unworthy, and it's kind of really exposed because everybody knows Reagan.
Yes.
And so it took me quite a while to say yes to it, in fact,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, but I finally did, because I was invited to go up to his ranch, you know, the Western White House, which is way up on top of a mountain,
mm-hmm.
You know, above Santa Barbara. And you go through you drive up the 5 miles of the worst road you ever were on and get up to the top of this place, and you come, go through the gate and come out to the clearing. And I realized that Reagan was a humble man, very humble man. He was he wasn't a rich man.
Really?
This property is not a rich person's property.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. It's and it's the house was about like 1,300 square feet. And this is where he and Nancy like lived. This was his, you know, place. House was like 1,300 square feet. They had a king size bed, but it was two single beds that were zip tied together.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And their clothes were in the closet like they were just about to come back. There was not a place that was open to the public. You know, and
you mean even after he was an actor and after he was governor,
he was never a rich, he wasn't a rich guy.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
probably made a lot of other people very rich, but he was, he was who he was. And I could really feel him up there at the ranch. And that's what kind of turned me that I felt like I could maybe do this,
mm-hmm.
or was very intrigued to do it.
Is it really hard to do, like, I know you did Great Balls of Fire,
mm-hmm.
and
doing Real People, you mean?
Yeah, doing Real People. Is that?
Yeah, well, yeah, Jerry Lee, he was actually over my shoulder the entire time we were doing
Great
Balls
crazy?
Of Fire. He was one of my piano teachers that, you know, he was over my shoulder going, you get it wrong, son. You know, half the time.
Did that make you mad, or was it like helpful?
He made me feel everything. He was the greatest. He could be so generous, and then he could be like a 14-year-old schoolyard bully.
Right.
But he had his he was, man, there'll never be another one like him.
No.
That's one of the reasons why I say my lucky life, because who gets to do that?
Right.
You know, and also do it when you're in Memphis and we're in Sun Studios every night rehearsing with Jerry's original band.
That's just,
you know, Roland James and JW and all those guys, and you know, Jack Clement, who was the engineer at Sun Studios, mm-hmm. I'd known since the night the lights went on in Georgia, actually. And
yeah,
that was a whole thing. But Reagan was kind of like the same way, playing somebody. It's daunting, you know?
Yeah.
Because you don't want to do an impersonation of them.
Right.
You want to...
Because as you said, acting is just being yourself.
Yeah.
But then when you're playing Ronald Reagan, you can't just be your... I mean...
Well, you have to be. You know, it's like what you have to... Because you are you, you know? But it's really about capturing... the essence of somebody and
playing
them
shaky.
From their point of view.
His voice was a little shaky. Did you shake your voice?
I played him from the time he was 35 till
death.
Till he said goodbye with his letter about Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at the beginning, his voice was, as an actor, you know, he was way up, very high, you know, because we all have that.
Yeah.
You know, that it slowly goes down to, towards the end of the presidency, you slow down a little bit.
I have chills.
And, you know, your voice gets a little lower and stuff. But that's...
I have chills.
That's just the outside stuff. You know, it means a lot to you to, like, look and sound like him. But it's capturing him. And with him, it was like, it's really one of the toughest roles ever. Because... there's all kinds of videotape or anything about Reagan and the like. And you know, met so many people that knew him so well and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, but in the end, he's kind of a person that was in a way unknowable. He's the great communicator and everybody feels like they know him, but it's personally, there's a
wall.
You come up to a wall that may or may not be intentional or whatever, but there's this private space there,
mm-hmm.
that I think only Nancy really knew.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. I loved him. I mean,
yeah, it's just what he represented, you know,
is the movie
time that he came along for America. It was important.
Very important. Yeah. I mean, he was our most important president ever, I think.
I agree with you.
Yeah. And truly loved our country, truly cared about the people.
What he was, I think, to people, the whole country, was he was everybody's dad.
Mm-hmm.
For good or bad. I mean, because he was getting... people forget. I mean, it was always being accused. He was a warmonger. He was going to get us, you know, into a war. He was going to ruin the economy. He was going to, you know, it was always that. So he was hated as much as he was loved too, mm-hmm. you know, according to family relationships, you know, he's your dad for better or worse.
So I was just going to tell you the story real quick, just about Reagan, but Brad Paisley and I were asked to write a song for The Passion of the Christ, and they were going to make an album with original songs based on that movie.
Mm-hmm.
So Brad and I wrote this song called New Again. I was pregnant with Audrey, and it was the day of Ronald Reagan's funeral.
Oh, really?
So we watched the funeral and we both cried because it was just so, I was so sad about his death. And so we watched the whole funeral. We both cried. We were very emotional. And then we wrote this song about a duet between Mary and Jesus, where, you know, Mary's talking to Jesus and basically saying, why do you have to do this? And like asking God, like, why do you have to use my son? And then Jesus is saying, like in the Bible, when he said, get away from me, woman.
Mm-hmm.
because this is God's will.
Right.
You know, so don't try to stop it right. or whatever. But that's just a little fun side story.
He's remembered more softly than he, I think, than when he was president, you know?
Yeah.
It's
less criticized.
Because, and that says a lot. That says a lot to his legacy.
Yes. Yeah. So were you any kind of a co-producer or anything with the movie? Or you just starred in it?
Yes. You know, I have a producer's credit on it, but it's...
I only asked that
because... You know, I was really concerned with, you know, Reagan.
Yeah.
Rather than actively doing what a producer does.
I only asked that because I was just wondering if you felt at the end of the movie that Reagan was portrayed properly.
I hope so. I mean, for me, I got a lot out of it, you know, mm-hmm. and I always feel like you never do enough or whatever, but it was really, that's what I love about acting the most, you know, is that I get to live and know what it's like to be all these other kinds of lives, whether it be an astronaut or like, mm-hmm. or Doc Holliday or Jerry Lee Lewis or Ronald Reagan, and kind of like step in their shoes and figuring out what made them tick. It's really interesting, you know, the human nature and telling their stories. And so I feel a real responsibility in telling somebody's story, especially when they're real people, because I don't know if somebody was doing a movie about my life that, you know, I'd want them to try to get it right or do it from my point of view.
Or represent you in the way that you truly were.
At least honestly, you know,
honestly,
authentically.
But, right.
You know,
I think that's where I was going with that. Like Hollywood, I just didn't know if they tried to make him look like it.
No, this movie Reagan's not made by Hollywood.
Okay.
Hollywood would never make
the
movie Reagan.
Right. That's what I was asking before.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, this is like independent, very independent.
Great. And when does it come out?
It comes out this year.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, me too. It's been like 3 years since we made it.
Can I come over and sit on your couch with you and Laura and watch it?
Well, or come to the theater. How about that?
I will do that too, but I also want to watch it with
I think
you.
We're going to have hopefully do a premiere right here in Nashville.
Invite me.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
So love to come. What's your, like, my favorite thing to do in the world is to sit on my cloud couch and watch TV and not go anywhere because
that's pretty much what I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's y'all's favorite thing to do? Like, I literally would never leave my house if I didn't have to because of all the years of traveling and working. And
COVID was such a life changer for musicians, especially,
right? Yes.
And actors too, because they're just on the road so much that it's like being at home is such a luxury.
It is.
Yeah. And it's so nice.
So nice.
And be at home with the kids and your relationships and routines, and it's very precious.
And DoorDash. Yeah. I'm a big cook. So when my kids were growing up, I cooked 3 meals a day, hot breakfast every morning. But then when your kids grow up, you know, and you're just like,
yeah, schedules and stuff
I'm
like that.
I'm not going to eat. Has.
Yeah.
I'm just going to, you know, DoorDash a cheeseburger, but I also don't eat healthy either. I don't care about health food.
Yeah.
I'm really weird
that way. You look great.
Well, thanks.
Yeah.
So I pretty much
eat whatever I want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me too. I think it's all scams anyway.
Just had, you know, biscuits and gravy. I had my favorite breakfast. After all, our grandparents lived pretty long with it.
And they ate lard. They ate lard.
They had lard. Crisco.
They didn't have bottled water. You know, yeah, Crisco.
Yeah.
I just made Olivia a homemade red velvet cake with Crisco icing.
You did? Mm-hmm. It's got to make it with that. It doesn't have the same texture unless
it
you do, right?
It does not. It really does not. Is there anything else you want to talk about before we close? Anything else you want to...
only about what a fan I've always been of you.
Oh, and thank you.
Just like, well, like both Laura and I get the meeting you like, what, a year and a half ago now? And mm-hmm. stuff like that. Such a thrill. And it's love being in Nashville, having friends like you.
Yes.
It's such a great place to live. I love this town.
I so love collegial. This town.
And in a way that it ought to be. I love the relationships between artists here.
Isn't it great?
It's fantastic.
Everyone's really nice to each other and nobody's trying to stab each other in the back. And
yeah,
everybody's very genuine. And same with you and Laura.
Or at least they hide it really well.
Or at least they hide it really well. Exactly.
It is genuine. It really is genuine mm-hmm. here. It's easy to make friends that I find kind of a disappearing art in the rest of the world. Yeah,
I agree with you. True. Yeah, I've so enjoyed talking to you and again meeting. I wanted Laura to come on the podcast, and she's like, "I think it's just going to be Dennis," and because I love your wife so much.
I know, but you could do a whole podcast on Laura. And I bet you will.
I
eventually
will.
Because.
No, I want to, believe this, me.
She can't be stopped.
No, I know that. I mean, we've had a few meetings and we've had a few business things, and there still might be some stuff in our future where we work together. And I watch her in those meetings and I'm like, that girl's got her shit together.
Yeah, she does.
She really does.
Lucked out. Thank you, Lord.
Well, I can't wait to see Reagan. I can't.
The Again. Long Game, which is also coming out, it'll be out April 6th. It's a movie we made down in South Texas, and it's an underdog. You know, the outside is it's a golf movie that's about these real true story. These seven kids in South Texas in the 50s who were caddies at this golf club where they could not play at, mm-hmm. you know, because of the way it was back then, mm-hmm. and. They formed their own team and built their own golf course out in the desert. You know, just like one hole that you shot came to these poor kids. And they started a high school team and won the state championship at the very golf course where they couldn't play.
Wow.
And a true story. And it's a very kind of American dream story, mm-hmm. you know, in a way that hit me sort of like a movie that I did, Breaking Away, was
yep.
kind of that way.
Mm-hmm.
And has a lot of charm to it. And I'm very proud of that. And that's the first movie of our company, Bonniedale, that production company that we started.
Yeah. Congratulations. Yeah. I can't wait to see that. Yeah. Yeah, I knew y'all were down there working on it. And it comes out this year as well.
Yeah, but no, it's called The Long Game.
Okay. The Long Game, Reagan, and then your album Fallen, a gospel album for sinners.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Thank you so much.
Keep on trying.
It's such an honor that you came on my podcast.
Oh, I'm really so glad to be here.
Appreciate it so
Thanks
much.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.